Our next speaker is Dr. Han Nguyen. Dr. Nguyen was born in Vietnam, and he escaped from Vietnam as one of the boat people refugees from the communist-controlled Vietnam in a perilous journey across the high seas in 1980. I think a lot of you would remember that episode way back when. His time in Canada was originally in the Kootenays, where he grew up, but then he went on and completed his Bachelor's of Science, Master's of Science at UBC in 1989, and he went on to do a double PhD in medicine in 1994. He did a postdoctoral fellowship at the Rockefeller University in New York, and then went and worked in the United States for a little while before coming back to God's country here in Canada. As of 2007, he's been a part of the medical school student teaching program, first in the Prince George program, Northern Medical Program, and now in Vancouver. Dr. Nguyen has maintained his research interest on the prevention of type 2 diabetes and in the area of immunometabolism, in particular using the updated knowledge on diabesity. And so we welcome Dr. Nguyen, and his talk is entitled Diabesity Prevention. It is in our hands, and we can do it. Dr. Nguyen.
So just briefly, as you probably heard, for me, to see these numbers in terms of the prevalence of obesity and diabetes in our society, nationally and also globally, is quite frightening, because every year as I lecture to our future doctors, to the medical students, these numbers keep increasing dramatically. And for me, as a preventive medicine philosopher, it's very frightening for me to see these numbers are moving so quickly. So at the moment, the data shows that we have about 1.5 billion overweight adults globally in our world, and within that, over 400 million people are actually already obese. And the other thing is actually these, they go hand in hand. It's just like a very happy, married couple. So they usually, with this increase in overweight and obesity, we also see an increase in the rate of type 2 diabetes, and that's the reason why for the term diabesity, meaning the marriage of these two illnesses. And as I mentioned, the numbers is quite frightening for us to look at every year. As you look at now, in 2012, the most recent data shows that we actually have about 346 million people worldwide being diagnosed with diabetes. About 7 years ago, when I first lectured to the second year medical students, this was a number that we predict for 2025. So we're already about 13 years ahead of us, ahead of schedule, which is not something that we really want. So at the moment, the prediction for 2030 is about 439 million people will be diabetic. And so within those, 90% of these type 2 diabetes are overweight and obese. So that's just the data. And that's the reason why in 2007, I actually put out the term, I don't call it a global epidemic, I actually call it a diabetic tsunami. And it took the Canadian Diabetes Association until, I think, the president of the CDA in October 2010 or 2011 really actually used this term tsunami in public. So that's just the kind of bit more of depressing side, but I like to save the majority of my talks today, the next 7-8 minutes or so, is actually presenting the things that actually, the positive side of it, things that is actually within our hands. And speaking what I present in the next 7-8 minutes to you, all of these key principles of prevention is actually based on personal experience, because myself, about over 12 years ago, I was actually diagnosed as impaired fasting, which is a step closer to being diabetic, and I was not 145 pounds like I am now. I was actually almost close to 180. My waist size is about 36, 37, and I still have pants to show that because I float in them now. But it is something, as you will see progressing through my talk, it is something that it takes time, and it takes a lot of hard work to get there. But as one of my colleagues at UBC, a very famous physiologist, said, it is hard to lose the weight, but it's, sorry for the language, for those children, maybe close your ear, but I'm just repeat what he said, it's bloody hell to maintain the weight that you lost. So that's the way we put it, and there's a reason for that. So some of these key principles, like I said, is personal experience, but it's truly based on what I call evidence-based practice. It's based on the most recent findings that we actually discover, that we found out, we understand about the disease. This is one of the diseases, diabetes is one of the diseases, the illness, that as you probably heard throughout the talks tonight, we actually understand the cause of it. We know why it happened. And we also know what needs to be done, but it's easier said than done. It's not that easy. And as much as I learned through my personal experience, it is a challenge for me every morning to get up and put that in and try to comply with that principle. So the first one is actually, I admire the Dalai Lama, and one of the things he's always said is, don't sell your health for money, because the story behind this in his book is actually people, when they get sick, and you know, they put in a lot of work trying to put in a lot of hours, as in our society nowadays, to make money. Money is there to make. But then when they get sick and they bring money to him, say, can you please pray for me so that I can get my health back? He said, no, I'm not God. I'm just a person, you know, practicing Buddhism. And so what I can advise you is, before this happened, don't sell your health for money. So the other principle that I also use, and I'm trying to use for myself, is actually I said my day for the last few years only had 23 hours. I don't have 24 hours a day. What I have is actually that 24th hours is protected sacredly, because I got to put in that 1 hour. Otherwise, my choice is actually I be diabetic and I need to take all of these medication for the rest of my life. The other principle, and I hope that in the discussion we have Dr. Gong, my dear colleague here, to actually explain this, is the fact that actually whatever you do, so you have to really make sure you think about it, because once you make that decision, and there's a reason for that, I will explain to you in the next few slides, is actually once you make that decision, in terms of physical activity, tomorrow has to be at least the same as today, if not better. And there's many reasons for that. So what I mean by that is, let's say if today, if you can actually walk for 5 minutes, from now on, the expectation is actually you need to walk at least 5 minutes the next day, if not 5.5. But don't try to be over enthusiastic and do an hour today and then take the rest of the week off or something like that. So that's what it means by tomorrow got to be the same or better than today. So some of these key findings that we find now that we discover is actually we don't recommend that you lose weight quickly. Like I said, I was 175, 178, 180 pounds about 12, 14 years ago when I was having a really good job with a drug company and just sitting around sitting on the desk, and I had tons of goodies from France, all of these chocolate, candies, cookies, you name it, these French buttery cookies, they're just wonderful. And then a couple, it's like Dr. Nixon was saying, but the thing is, they're deadly. So don't try to lose it quickly. Make sure you keep, the first goal to achieve is keep your current weight stable. And there's a reason for that, more and more evidence to prove that. The other thing is, there's a reason for that is, you don't want to lose weight quickly, you want to slowly replace what we call the fat mass, which is the weight that you have there, especially the what we call visceral adiposity or the abdominal fat. You want to lose that. You want to replace that with a fat-free mass, which is a muscle type of mass. And that can only be achieved. There's no easy way. Like I said, human, we always try to choose a path of least resistance, right, Dr. Nixon? But in this case, don't take the path of least resistance. You've got to work for it. So slowly replace it via exercise and a healthy diet. And like I said, it's a one-way street. Once you make that decision, you cannot go back, because through evolution, nature has actually given us a body that now we understand. In the 80s, when I was a graduate student, we didn't understand at UBC, when we learned about the psychology of eating and all of that, we didn't understand why all of these things happened. But now we understand that nature developed our body that has a really tightly connected controlling network to regulate so that we cannot lose weight. And all of that is via hormonal, as you heard from Dr. Maju tonight, neurological, hormonal, humoral. So all of these systems that really control, they work together as a very close-knit community to regulate, to ensure that you don't lose weight. Because in the old days, 100 years ago, that's deadly. And the fourth principle here is require community and family support. And I don't think it just from tonight, the contribution to the community of the Lafayette String Quartet team really is a role model for that contribution, for that support of the community that we need to continue sharing this message so that we can all work together to develop a healthy community. And like I said, I always mention for the medical students, I said, you know, as fast as we can try and produce doctors to help you when you're sick, in this type of tsunami, the diabetes tsunami, you have to run with us. We cannot pull you out of that tsunami if you refuse to run with us. So you have to take charge of that. So part of my talk then is actually to promote exercise, and there's so much now more and more evidence to demonstrate that exercise is medicine. And actually one of the most recent articles that I cite underneath here is actually exercise is medicine, because one of the most recent discovery is when you exercise, when you move around, even just the little things that we do, one of the key things that we found from these animal studies, and now we look into human, is actually these muscle cells secrete a substance we call hormone, which is circulating around the body. It's called irisin. And this is a hormone that can only be induced in exercise. And what it does is actually, it helps our body to use more energy, to burn up more glucose. It's just like you going from a hybrid electric car to a Hummer that uses more energy. So the irisin is like the Hummer, getting the car using more gasoline, more energy that you put in. In terms of the fat-free mass conservation, the fact is actually this studies discover that once you lose weight too quickly, and in these studies, they look at, and if you lose more than 7 kilograms, which is about 15 pounds, so if you lose too fast, what you also lose there is actually not the fat mass, but it's also the valuable things that you have that you try to hang on is the fat-free mass, which is the muscle. And the fat-free mass is also not just a muscle that we can see here, but it's also the organs, the heart, the kidney, the lungs. All of these do have muscle in them too. You don't want to lose them. Through nature, as we age, we already lose them, so don't try to accelerate that process. So by losing weight too quickly, it's not a good thing. And in order to preserve that valuable commodity that we have, that God gave us, we actually need what we call resistance training. And I think Dr. Gore, in our discussion, can actually elaborate more on that. But resistance training is, that's the study that we found helped to conserve that fat-free mass. And also, it also helps to raise the resting or preserve the resting energy expenditure, because the resting energy expenditure is the amount of energy it actually helped to consume about two-thirds of the energy that we take in. It's the energy that keeps our bodies surviving. We call it resting energy expenditure. You want to maintain that. That is a very crucial aspect of it. And before, actually, I sold all of my share in this beverage company, sugar sweetened beverage company, before this study came out. No, I'm just kidding. But it's always, I always observe through the audiences, every talk that I give, and when it gets to this slide halfway through, I see a lot of people reach out for their bottle of water and drink. Because this study, what we found is actually when you drink a glass of water actually helps to increase the resting energy expenditure, which is the major consumption of the energy that we take into our body. That helps to raise it by about 25%. And each glass of water actually lasts for about more than 40 minutes. And by just really eliminate that sugar, sweetened soft drink out of our daily lives, we actually, and just drinking the good water, and thank God, it's just like Dr. Hayashi was saying, you know, this is Canada, and it's like God's country, because we're very blessed. Coming back to Vietnam, we don't have that clean water like here to drink. So if we drink just water, we actually helps to reduce our weight by an average about 1.2 kilograms, which is about almost 3 pounds per year. That might sound like a small number, but it's not. It is very crucial. Remember what Dr. Hamill was saying, by just losing about 5% of your current weight, 5 to 10%, you actually reduce the risk of having a heart attack or a stroke later, a few years later, tremendously. So subsequently, just drink water. Now, in terms of sleep and obesity, we also, the studies actually look at both the adolescent and the adults. What we found is actually in terms of sleep, if you don't sleep enough, if you sleep too little, it also accelerates the increase in your body weight. So one key thing I like also to make clear here, as we age, we don't need that many hours of sleep. So not because after today's talk that you go home, you said, geez, I just have 5 hours sleep. So I need to get 8 hours sleep so that I get my weight back. No, it doesn't work that way. As we age, we don't need that many hours of sleep. So by the time now I get to my mid-50, I don't need 8 hours anymore. I sleep about 5.5 to 6 hours per day max. So subsequently, and by the time you get to 60, 70, you might just need 5, 4.5 hours, as long as it's a good sleep. So by what I'm saying is 7 to 8 hours a day, it helps to decrease fat mass gain. It's just the fact that that's for, you know, in the 30 or 40. So I don't want to, I just want to make sure that it's clear so that, you know, for those who are 50, 60, 70, 80, tonight when you go home, you say, geez, I got to get more sleep, otherwise I'm going to be fat. No, it doesn't work that way. So, but for adolescents, yes, we need them to sleep at least about 8 hours. So if you have children in teen, in 20s, they need to get about 8 hours sleep from the studies that we have shown. So in terms of management, we have actually the three components that are actually quite important. The diet, the physical activity, which is the exercise, that is that it has to be part of our daily lives now. You cannot do without it. And the other thing is, thank God for the counselor like Dr. Nixon, we need the psychiatrists, the psychologists to help us, to help counsel us to reinforce our confidence so that we can actually proceed with that on that path. In terms of exercise, the recommendation is actually more than 250 minutes per week, which is, if you look at divide by 5, 250 divided by 5, that's about 50, but if you divide by 7, so it's about 35, 40 minutes. So to me, it's that's really good, but what we find is actually 45 minutes to 60 minutes. That's the reason why I promote the philosophy that the day from now on, I hope that some of you today, from today when you go home, your day, we just have 23 hours. Because we're living in a society that always, we said, we're always so busy, as Dr. Nixon was showing, we don't have time to sit down and eat with our family, we don't have time for this. We create that monster. We actually destroy ourselves. We destroy our society. We are going to that path of self-destruction. So we gotta go back against that. And that has to be both resistance and aerobic exercise. So in terms of all of these studies that, and in fact, on the plane over here, I was reading one of the most recent articles that I just published, is actually in terms of long-term weight loss, there's no question of decreasing in portion size. And the portion in terms of between Canada and USA is quite humongous. So, you know, just unbelievable. So anyway, so you make sure that your portion size is decreased, decrease the fat intake, and also increasing your fruit and vegetable intake. But remember, fruit and vegetables are also calorie, but they're not as bad as the other. So it's just because that you said, I'm eating a lot of fruit and vegetable, I can eat as much as I want. No, just remember that it also counts as calorie. And so just the take-home message that I always, from all of the learning, from all of these findings in the last 10 years or so, what I realized is actually, especially I said, probably God or nature gave each of us a life in this earth and gave us the same amount, portion of food. The question is whether how fast we eat it. And so that's why I always end my presentation by a quote from Benjamin Franklin in actually 1737, which is quite amazing. It's over 200 years ago? I can't even do the math anymore. Over 200 years ago, it's actually, he said, to lengthen thy life, lessen thy meals. And so on that, I thank you for your attention.